for a lot of emerging markets, crypto is really important for accessibility of financial services because you don't need to, like, banking is very CapEx intensive as an industry. Like, it takes a lot to set up the software, the ledgers, the business processes. And if you use blockchain technology or smart contracts, you can effectively set up at a very low cost. On Maple, there's effectively zero fixed cost investment to setting up a lending business. And so you could set up a pool on Maple that targets lending to small businesses that could be in emerging markets. That's now a zero fixed cost or near zero fixed cost lending business that is purely variable margin. So you start lending, you have some costs of assessing the loans, some costs of bad debt, and then some costs of collecting and servicing the loans. But you could start lending to businesses in emerging markets in a way that they don't currently have access to.
Welcome to Tech Intersect. I'm your host, Tanya Evans, and my life and work exist at the heart of law, business, and technology. Yeah, I've earned a few fancy titles and degrees over the years, but the bottom line is I'm a writer, speaker, teacher, and lifelong learner, and I'm really excited that you've joined me on this journey. So what is Tech Intersect? Well, it's authentic, empowering conversations with really interesting guests who demystify complex topics to prepare you for the future, because your future is now, and it exists where law, business, and tech intersect. Get ready to listen, learn, and leverage. Let's get started. In this episode of Tech Intersect, I am so very excited to welcome Sid Powell to the show. Sid is the CEO and co-founder of Maple Finance, a private credit platform built on the rails of blockchain's distributed data ledger technology for institutional lenders to run alternative credit strategies. And Maple has had extraordinary success. It's facilitated over $2 billion in institutional loans since its launch in just 2021. And Sid comes from a banking and securitization background, having previously worked at National Australia Bank before serving as treasurer at a private equity-backed commercial lending company. Sid joined me on CoinDesk's Banking on Crypto special, which I co-hosted during Consensus earlier this year in 2023. And we discussed how the blockchain-based crypto lending protocol is doing amid the regional banking sector issues, of which there were many in the beginning of 2023. We also talked about the crypto sector in general, following the epic and, in my opinion, egregious collapse of the exchange FTX. And I invited him on Tech Intersect to continue the conversation and talk about the future of lending in a decentralized world. We will talk about all of that and more in a moment. But first, Sid, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, Tonya. Great to be here.
Absolutely. Well, it's great to see you again, Sid. And you have a fascinating background in banking and securitization and now blockchain-based lending. So could you give us an overview of your journey from traditional banking to a blockchain-based lending to help us better understand the bridge between TradFi and DeFi?
Yeah, for sure. As you mentioned in the intro, I come from a securitization background. And for those who aren't familiar with it, what it means is that I was part of a bank and we were lending to lending companies who would then use a really large loan that we gave them to make smaller loans to their customers. And they could be car loans, home loans, credit cards. And so I did that for a while and it was a really interesting entry point and education on how debt markets work. And then I transitioned from that role and went to run treasury at a lending company. So I kind of went from being on the bank side to being on the client side, working in one of those companies to manage their lending, not manage their lending portfolio, but manage their financing. And as part of that role, I got to see how all the aspects of that business worked. And so I found that really fascinating to understand how the sausage is made, so to speak. So how credit works, reporting works, collections, as well as the funding, which was funding for that business, which was my purview. It was around that time that I started learning about blockchain. And so if you think about what I was doing day to day was kind of project managing, collecting, reporting, liaising with banks and investors, and turning the data that we would collect as part of that lending company into actionable reports and interfacing with different parts of the business. So part of what frustrated me there was the level of kind of manual input that was involved in running the business, so to speak, or in managing that lending portfolio. What I saw in blockchain was the potential to automate all of this. So I could see all of these parties, where they are a trustee, trust manager, custodian, who we were paying third-party fees to. We would do some work, manually send it to them via email, have them do some work, and then they send it back via email again. And I was thinking, couldn't this all just be reduced to actions executed by software? And then lo and behold, I started reading about blockchain, the idea of smart contracts and having loans that could self-execute. So that was the light bulb moment for me of, we could take something that's effectively paper-based and manual and start to turn this into a software-driven business. And that was what really kicked off the journey that has culminated in the launch and growth of Maple.
I really think that this area in particular is so well-suited for the technology. When you think of the if-then principle, there's so many things that can be automated and made better, faster, cheaper, and you found that. And one of my friends says, blockchain is not hot sauce. You cannot put it on everything. But when it works like magic. And this is one of those areas. It's the reason I'm so excited about DeFi in general, but self-executing loans and facilitating transactions in that way, obviously at a retail, but also an institutional level. So let's talk more about Maple Finance and explain to the listeners what Maple Finance is and how it facilitates institutional lending.
Yeah, for sure. And so where I left off in that last question was this idea that self-executing loans were what got me interested in the blockchain sector and what prompted the growth of, or the idea for Maple. So how to describe Maple is, it's kind of like a capital market that sits on top of a blockchain. What does that actually mean? It means that we created software to run lending businesses. So Maple works in the following way. You have this concept of a pool. A pool is like a smart contract. So you can think of it as a lockbox. There's many different ways to think of it. A lockbox, a credit fund, a CLO, a kind of trust. But we use this concept of a pool. And then people who are typically institutional investors or lenders will deposit into the pool. They're depositing stable coins and they're doing that to lend. So they're the supply side of a lending business. They are putting capital in. They expect it to be loaned out and they're loaning it via this smart contract. Overseeing the pool, you have a credit manager and they're responsible for making the decisions on who gets a loan and on what terms do they get a loan. And they're really trying to manage the credit risk. So the same as a credit team at a bank or the credit underwriters at a credit fund, any type of lending activity uses the skill set. And then on the other side, you've got institutional borrowers. Now, right now, those borrowers are typically trading firms. So they typically fall within the Web3 space. And that's kind of the niche that understands the product first. But keep in mind, our goal is to serve any innovative business inside or outside of crypto. But that's the way it works. So it's actually a very simple business at core, simple protocol at core, which is people put funds into a smart contract. We use the smart contract to house the assets. And so that replaces the need for like a trustee or, a manual real world legal structure. And then we have loans that settle on chain. Every payment is recorded on chain. So you instantly have this kind of quantum leap in transparency and auditability. You always know how all of the loans are performing in real time. And you can see that when you look at the global securitization market, for example, that's hundreds of thousands of loans that form part of that. And so to be able to read all of those, every payment associated with all of those loans in real time, you can see that that's going to save a huge amount of money for financial services. And ultimately, that's money that could be passed back to consumers and businesses in the form of lower interest rates on their loans. It really is quite exciting for what this could do for the potential of capital markets in lowering the cost of accessing finance if you're a business owner trying to do something innovative and trying to grow your business.
And the time that it takes, or the time is collapsed. It can take so long to execute when you have human friction. And so reducing or collapsing that time is tremendous as well.
Yeah, 100%. I should add, so people might ask, well, what's the point of doing this on blockchain? Like there's fairly good lending that happens off blockchain anyway. But what the blockchain does is allow instantaneous settlement in minutes, seconds even. And so when a loan is funded on Maple, couple of really interesting things to note. So when a loan is funded on Maple, that's the click of a button when a borrower requests a loan. and the money is sent to them within 15 seconds. It's the next block on the blockchain. Similarly, when somebody's depositing to start lending out, they start earning interest instantly, block by block, and they can see that interest accruing, and they can control their funds. So this is one of the interesting security aspects of blockchain is right. that idea of self-custody and transparency. But I was going to add, just so people know that whilst this is still a niche space, it is relatively battle-tested now in terms of the dollar amounts that have been lent. Maple itself is only one lender in the space, and we've done over $2 billion worth of loans on the platform to businesses with a very good record of credit performance during what was the most volatile period in the history of the digital asset space last year.
And this is all happening on the EVM? Is this in the Ethereum space?
This is the Ethereum chain.
Okay. Yeah. And you mentioned earlier, many listeners will be right here where we are. I was noting a couple of terms of art that I want to define. And so taking a step back, you mentioned stablecoins. And stablecoins, for those who don't know, they are cryptographically secured digital currencies that are pegged to some other asset, and therefore they remain stable. So some of the concerns that people have around crypto assets is the volatility. Stables are meant to avoid that without having to offboard from the crypto space back into fiat, which is government issued currency. So we have stables. Are there stable coins in particular that lenders are locking up? One in particular or several? How does that work?
Yeah, there are. So, I mean, the stablecoin market is very interesting to us because I see it as kind of, it's for us, it's kind of like the water, right? Or it is what we need to kind of grow Maple's business and right. level of activity. We need there to be more stablecoins. There's currently about 140 billion in circulation, and we need that to really grow 10x so that mm-hmm. there's more access to money that can be lent on chain. And coming back directly to your question, so the stable coins that we have focused on are USDC and mm-hmm. USDT. So mm-hmm. these are a coin issue. USDC is a coin issued by Circle and Coinbase. USDT is a coin issued by Tether. And together, they make up about 90% of the stablecoin market. Each of these coins, what they have in common is that they're fiat-backed. So you can think of it like they represent money in a bank account. Now, mm-hmm. not everyone will like that concept, and some people are concerned about the counterparty risk there. But what I would say to balance that is if you ever paid for something with PayPal, if you pre-funded your PayPal account, that's not unlike a stablecoin, except it's a stablecoin that you can do less with. Mm-hmm. So with money that you pre-fund into a PayPal account, you can pay it at places that PayPal is accepted at the checkout. With USDC, you can effectively pay that to anyone who's operating on top of a blockchain. So I think that is something that I consider really powerful about stablecoins and why they have inherent utility. We, for example, have, as a startup, just wearing our startup hat for a second, have paid legal bills before using stablecoins, tech vendor bills before. When I pay with a stablecoin, I just hit, you know, I control, copy, and paste the address that it's going to, like an email. So it gets sent much, much quicker. When I have to send fiat money to somebody through a wire, I have to manually key out a bunch of numbers to do that and then get someone's address right. It takes me, no joke, 10 times the amount of time to send a fiat wire as it does to send stablecoins.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tanya M. Evans, author of Digital Money Demystified. And I want to let you know that to stay on the leading edge of any opportunity, especially investing, you have to empower yourself with the tools and resources needed to keep your knowledge and skills current. And if you're relying on last year's information or even last month's, look, you're already behind. Sure, you can try to figure this out on your own at YouTube University. The problem is, it's difficult to separate fact from fiction with so many carnival barkers banking on your inexperience. And of course, there are the naysayers, usually from legacy finance, banking on your fear while they quietly help their high net worth clients to invest. All of it muddies the waters when all you want to know is how to get in safely, legally, and confidently so you're not left behind. That's why I wrote Digital Money Demystified, where I take the top 10 crypto myths head on and give you well-researched, well-supported facts to empower you to make good choices out there in the new digital cash economy. As a law professor who developed the first blockchain crypto and law online certificate program, a retail and corporate crypto policy and education trainer, and a thought leader appearing regularly on national media, I've done the heavy lifting so you don't have to. Look, there are plenty of books and courses on which crypto assets to invest in. Digital Money Demystified is the book you read before you dive into those. So head to digitalmoneydemystified.com to learn more and prepare for the future of money and wealth today.
Absolutely. Oh, we're talking about you today, not me, but I've got chills and a hot face as you mentioned a wire that I was sending, a large wire from one of my accounts to another one of my accounts. And because one of the transacting banks didn't put the for further credit to, it came back twice. I had entered the information. I measured twice to cut once, but there was some nudnik in the middle, extracting value and not adding much. And so the ability to do this and to reduce the time, reduce the cost, open up whole new markets that become global because we are truly global citizens without being beholden to a particular country is just truly a game changer. And it is really, really exciting. And you can see it, as you said, you have, as we say, the receipts because you have all of the real-time success that can not just talk about, but you're actually doing. That makes me think of some of the success metrics that I want to ask you about in a second. But the first thing that popped into my mind is, how do you navigate, given that this is global, everyone is a different space and accessing it in different geographical locations, that necessarily implicates legal issues, the regulatory landscape? We're not doing a very good job here in the United States. I know you are a global citizen, but what do you think about and how has the company navigated the regulatory landscape and risk management in this space?
Yeah, for sure. Regulation is one of the toughest things to navigate in this space because you have multiple different jurisdictions, each taking their own approach. I think in future, we'll probably see those conform towards at least some kind of shared standards just because it is inherently a global business. You know, given that one of the important things about crypto or digital assets is there's zero marginal cost of distribution because it's like sending an email. So there is plenty of marginal cost to sending a paper letter to somebody who's overseas versus domestically, but there's zero marginal cost to sending stablecoins or other cryptocurrency overseas rather than domestically. How we've had to approach our regulation is we've tried to minimize that footprint. I mean, we, as is, Maple does more institutional lending, so it falls in the unregulated category of lending. It's not touching consumers and mums and dads. And then the client set who deposits is typically institutional, so it's high net worths, accredited investors, institutional allocators, businesses who are doing so. So again, it's not really catering to retail. Even still, we've had to observe things and make decisions to kind of limit or slow, I guess, the speed of expansion by using things like a Reg S exemption. So serving offshore customers or Reg D, where you restrict it to private placements and accredited investors who can participate. I see more startups looking overseas at jurisdictions or outside of the US. I think the UK and Hong Kong are emerging pretty strongly, given the frameworks and the effort the government has gone into to put those together and to signal that crypto and entrepreneurship is welcome in those places. The UK, I think, is one of the more interesting ones because it's already a financial center and they've just recently put in place the new legislation. And unlike some of the other jurisdictions, the executive branch of the government has actually also signaled that they are supportive of it. Whereas what I would say in the US is, I think we've seen draft legislation that's very interesting and is a huge step forward. But so far, the executive branch has signaled it's pretty against crypto, which certainly hurts the space. And increasingly, I see entrepreneurs looking at other jurisdictions to set themselves up in.
Absolutely. I testified earlier this year before the House Financial Services Subcommittee on Digital Assets, Financial Technology and Inclusion. And then there were some other drafts of legislation circulating around at that time and certainly since. But to your point, if you can't be on one accord with the legislative branch here in the States that creates the agencies that then run the day-to-day operations, that executive branch is the second branch of our government, and the regulatory bodies, the SEC, CFTC, et cetera, that's an executive function of the day-to-day. And even though they are created by legislative enactments and have their own enabling legislation to say kind of the framework for what should be done, there's a lot of mortar in between those bricks. And that day-to-day functioning really resides with the heads of commissions. And so we see a complete disconnect. Time is not going to wait. Innovation is not going to wait. It marches on. And so that'll be a story for another day. But we see the unfortunate result of businesses leaving the United States elsewhere. That doesn't mean that the rules are easier, but they are clear. And those two things can be true. I wanted to ask you, because one of my major interests in the space are the opportunities not only for increased liquidity, but that leads to accessibility, inclusion. I talk about it often at the retail level, but I imagine also for startups who are looking to innovate in this space and need lending to build. So I find that to be a really interesting opportunity for inclusion and accessibility. So I'm wondering how Maple fits into that specifically, or just in DeFi lending generally, how that can happen for startups on a more inclusive and accessible basis.
How it makes finance more inclusive and accessible for them. On the inclusivity side, I would say, if you look at DeFi, it's kind of like going towards wireless internet infrastructure is a pretty good example, and skipping the fixed line infrastructure. So if you look at, take Africa or Kenya, for example, where they, with their internet infrastructure, they went straight to wireless and they skipped fixed line infrastructure. For a lot of emerging markets, crypto is really important for accessibility of financial services, because you don't need to, like, banking is very CapEx intensive as an industry. Like, it takes a lot to set up the software, the ledgers, the business processes. And if you use blockchain technology or smart contracts, you can effectively set up at a very low cost. On Maple, there's effectively zero fixed cost investment to setting up a lending business. And so you could set up a pool on Maple that targets lending to small businesses that could be in emerging markets. That's now a zero fixed cost or near zero fixed cost lending business that is purely variable margin. So you start lending, you have some costs of assessing the loans, some costs of bad debt, and then some costs of collecting and servicing the loans. But you could start lending to businesses in emerging markets in a way that they don't currently have access to. That handles the accessibility, and they can access those financial services without a bank account, which is the important part. You didn't have to invest the money to set up a bank to give them a bank account. They could just set up an Ethereum wallet address and start receiving USDC or some other currency that they could use to fund inventory, hire people, put down a deposit on a business premises. And so I think that's a really important value and positive externality of crypto. As far as inclusivity then for those businesses, you can give people greater access to credit because mm-hmm. you can now look at their blockchain activity to form a proxy of their creditworthiness. So before, you would need a FICO score, and your FICO score would be dependent on things like rental history or other things that could really only be tracked with banking infrastructure.
Right.
And that was really hard to gel and to get that bank, to get that financial information and data out of a bank, because their systems aren't very connected to the rest of the world. Mm. And with a blockchain, anyone can instantly read that information at a very low cost. And so I could be looking at a small business, let's say in Latin America, that didn't have access to a bank account before. And if they'd been accepting payments in crypto or stablecoins, I can see, well, generally, they have this much revenue month to month. Generally, they're paying out this much in expenses. Mm. And then I can use that to underwrite and to give them credit. So I think that's how you could actually use the blockchain in a way that traditional finance hasn't yet solved, to expand accessibility and inclusivity of financial services.
That's outstanding. It really is the future of finance. The final question for you, or just next steps for Maple. I know that you're always innovating, you're always growing, you're always checking out the pain points and filling the gap. You're very nimble and well situated, which is a testament to your success. So what are the next steps for Maple?
We definitely have to move fast. The space doesn't slow down or wait for anyone to catch up. I mean, we've had a couple of developments recently. So we just launched a USDT version of our cash management pool. That cash management product, it took the problem of traditional finance didn't want to deal with Web3 or crypto startups or individuals. And so they didn't have a place to park cash and to get a low risk interest rate on it through lending. And so we launched the cash management pool product, which is catering to offshore crypto startups, DAOs, high net worths. But we just opened that up to Tether. So that means we're now serving 90% of the stablecoin market. And the other thing we just announced a week and a half ago was Maple Direct. So for us, this is a big extension of what we were doing before, which was pure infrastructure. And we said, we have the expertise. A number of us come from Wall Street or banking backgrounds. So we know what we're doing when it comes to underwriting companies. And so natural extension of the product from just doing infrastructure to also doing the lending. It fills a huge gap that was left in the markets. There was $55 billion in loans that were happening on-chain start of last year. That's probably dwindled to less than $5 billion. And so companies who are operating Web3 need that credit. And so we want to step in and fill that gap. And the other thing is transparency. So everyone knows that centralized lending blew up last year and that it had a huge issue with opaqueness. You never, once you put your money into whether it was a Celsius or a BlockFi, you didn't know what was happening to it. And so when you put all of the loans on chain, you can see all the time how the borrowers are performing, what is happening with your money. And so I think that's really, it's a necessary kind of rebirth of that product. And so that's the other thing we've been working on is Maple Direct. But if anyone wants to find out more about us, they can, of course, go to at Maple Finance on Twitter or maple.finance.
Outstanding. Well, Sid Powell of Maple Finance, I'm really excited about everything that you're working on. And it's been a pleasure to have this conversation and share the future of finance with my listeners. And definitely, folks, before signing off, please take a moment to like, comment, and share this episode and this podcast with your networks. Follow me on social media, wherever we may be. I'm on 11 different things. I don't even know where I am, but don't fall victim to the scammers. That's what I know for sure. That's the only reason that I'm there at this point, is to hold my land, my digital space. Sid, thank you for joining us today, and definitely keep up the outstanding work in the future of finance.
Thanks, Tanya. Appreciate you having me on.
Thank you so much for listening to the Tech Intersect podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you love it, please tell the world. If not, go ahead and tell me. And in either case, drop a comment or ping me on social media at IPProfEvans with the hashtag Tech Intersect. And finally, a quick reminder on digital safety. There are a lot of scammers out there impersonating me and others, and I need your help. Now hear this, and remember, I will never slide into your DMs to say peace and blessings or hey, and I will never reach out to solicit your time or your money on social media, like ever. I'm not a trader. I am an educator and an attorney licensed in 4 states. Thank you very much. I'm here to inform, inspire, and empower. No cap. And definitely no Forex. So be careful, make good choices, and remember, I developed an entire free masterclass about the topic of digital safety in the crypto space. So check out secureyourcryptobag.com for more information. That's secureyourcryptobag.com. All right, that's all for this episode. Until next time, continue to shine.